The Stahlhelm, the army of the German nationalists, permitted itself to be absorbed and then dissolved, bit by bit. They grumbled, but offered no resistance. There was not one single example of energetic defence, of courage or principle. There was only panic, flight, and desertion. In March 1933, millions were ready to fight the Nazis. Overnight they found themselves without leaders. Some tried to join the Stahlhelm and the German nationalists when it became clear that none of the others was going to fight. For a few weeks, their membership numbers showed an exceptional rise. Then the organization was disbanded, and it too capitulated without a fight. This terrible moral bankruptcy of the opposition leadership is a fundamental characteristic of the March Revolution of 1933. It made the Nazi victory exceedingly easy. On the other hand, it also sheds doubt on the strength and durability of that victory. The swastika has not been stamped on the Germans as though they were a firm, resistant, but malleable mass, but as though they were a formless, yielding pulp that can equally easily take a different shape. Admittedly, March 1933 has left open the question as to whether it is worth the effort to try and reshape it. The moral inadequacy of the German character shown in that month is too monstrous to suppose that history will not one day call the nation to account for it. With other nations, every revolution has ultimately led to an enormous increase in the moral energy of both sides, however much blood might initially have been shed, however much they had at first been weakened. In the long run, revolutions have thus always strengthened the nations concerned. Just consider the vast quantity of heroism, death-defying courage, and human greatness exhibited by the Jacobins and the Royalists in the French Revolution, admittedly against a backdrop of cruelty and violence. It is the same with the Republicans and Franco supporters in Spain. Whatever the outcome, the courage of the fighters remains a source of strength in the mind of the nation. Instead of that source of strength, today's Germans have the memory of shame, cowardice, and weakness. That will inevitably have consequences one day, perhaps even lead to the dissolution of the German state. It was out of this treachery of its opponents and the feeling of helplessness, weakness, and disgust that it aroused that the Third Reich was born. In the elections of March the 5th, the Nazis had remained a minority. If there had been elections 3 weeks later, the German people would almost certainly have given them a true majority. This was not just a result of the terror or intoxication resulting from the constant festivities, though the Germans like being intoxicated by patriotic celebrations. The decisive cause was anger and disgust with the cowardly treachery of their own leadership. That had become, for a moment, stronger than the rage and hate against the real enemy. Hundreds of thousands who had up until then been opponents joined the Nazi Party in March 1933. The Nazis called them the Casualties of March and treated them with suspicion and contempt. The workers also left their social democratic and communist unions in equally large numbers and joined Nazi Betriebszellen, factory cells, or the SA. They did it for many reasons, often for a whole tangled web of them, but however hard one looks, one will not find a single, solid, positive, durable reason among them, not one that can pass muster. In each individual case, the process of becoming a Nazi showed the unmistakable symptoms of nervous collapse. The simplest, and if you look deeper, nearly always the most basic reason was fear. Join the thugs to avoid being beaten up. Less clear was a kind of exhilaration, the intoxication of unity, the magnetism of the masses. Many also felt a need for revenge against those who had abandoned them. Then there was a peculiarly German line of thought. All the predictions of the opponents of the Nazis have not come true. They said the Nazis could not win. Now they have won. Therefore the opponents were wrong. So the Nazis must be right. There was also, particularly among intellectuals, the belief that they could change the face of the Nazi Party by becoming a member, even now shift its direction. Then, of course, many just jumped on the bandwagon, wanting to be part of a perceived success. Finally, among the more primitive, inarticulate, simpler souls, there was a process that might have taken place in mythical times when a beaten tribe abandoned its faithless god and accepted the god of the victorious tribe as its patron. Saint Mark's, in whom one had always believed, had not helped. Saint Hitler was obviously more powerful. So let's destroy the images of Saint Mark's on the altars and replace them with the images of Saint Hitler. Let us learn to pray. It is the Jews' fault, rather than it is the capitalists' fault. Perhaps that will redeem us. The sequence of events is, as you see, not so unnatural. It is wholly within the normal range of psychology, and it helps to explain the almost inexplicable. The only thing that is missing is what in animals is called breeding. This is a solid inner kernel that cannot be shaken by external pressures and forces, something noble and steely, a reserve of pride, principle, and dignity to be drawn on in the hour of trial. It is missing in the Germans. As a nation, they are soft, unreliable, and without backbone. That was shown in March 1933. At the moment of truth, when other nations rise spontaneously to the occasion, the Germans collectively and limply collapsed. They yielded and capitulated, and suffered a nervous breakdown. The result of this millionfold nervous breakdown is the unified nation, ready for anything that is today the nightmare of the rest of the world.